mouth. She wants to ride it, she's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's too excited. Her man looks like...
Interesting crew we got here today for Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
It's a dream team.
We're going to have to wait and see if Jeff Levering continues the run of guests on this program that just continue to compliment Josh DiMaggio later today at 8:15. Josh DiMaggio in the big boy chair once again today. Jen on her way to East Lansing, Michigan for her story this week for College Game Day. Chewy, of course, still gallivanting off in Europe. Although we did get contact with the big guy today. He had some texts coming our way about Matthew Golden and Emeka Abuka. Still haven't gotten any Lederhosen picks from him. That's apparently coming on Friday. So Brian D is on the other side of the glass today. Brian, when was the last time you found yourself in the position you're currently sitting?
Not as long as you might think, Gabriel. I was in here in March, I think, on a show that Joshy hosted during the Big Ten tournament. We did like a Wisconsin, ironically enough, with Jen and East Lansing, a Wisconsin-Michigan State like Badgers basketball lead-in show on a Saturday morning this past March.
So not, sure, I recall.
Okay.
I'm not that dusty back here.
Okay, buddy. All right. I thought, I mean, again,
he's enough to be dangerous back there.
All right. He's enough to be dangerous. So we're going to have some fun today. I mentioned we've got Jason Wilde coming up. I want to get this out of the way right away on the Carpool's Talking text line. I don't know what Petey's doing at 2:09 a.m., but he decided to text the Carpool's Talking text line at 2:09 this morning.
Huh.
Should we trade for ETN? Don't know how that's going to help the Packers' problems, Petey, but I appreciate the text regardless. Huh. Don't think running back is the issue for the Green Bay Packers.
No, and I don't want to get too in-depth in the Jaguars, but they already traded one of their running backs to the Eagles, so I don't think they're going to be trading their other one.
Yeah, so again, I don't know if you've got ETN on your fantasy team, whatever. Because where we're actually going to start today is a place we don't talk a lot on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Because, honestly, they haven't really given us much to talk about, at least on the positive side of things, over the last handful of years. The Luke Fickell era has not gone the way that I think anyone thought it was going to go. Because everybody, and you know, I will still say to this point, I still think it was a good hire at the time. Like, given all of the information at the time, I feel like it was a good hire. Now, it has not gone well. So, we talk about this all the time with Ron Wolf. And Ron, as a general manager of the Green Bay Packers in the 90s, would quickly realize when he made a mistake and would try to alleviate the mistake as quickly as he possibly could. That is not apparently what's happening with Wisconsin football. As 10-point favorites, they lost to Maryland by double digits this past weekend. And the folks who showed up, because, well, the students decided they had better things to do on a Saturday, hard to blame them. For the folks who showed up, they were chanting "Fire Fickell" at some point during the show. Well, really the creator of Wisconsin athletics as we know it, Barry Alvarez, does a show on Mondays on our sister station in ESPN Madison. And here is what the former University of Wisconsin athletics director had to say about those who are chanting "Fire Fickell" on Saturday.
Coach, what do you make of how fans have reacted here?
I think
so
it's
far?
Embarrassing. I think it's terrible, despicable. They're spoiled rotten. Here's a team that you got young players trying to come on. They're competing. They're going to have a chance to get better, and you flip on them early in the season, and you flip on them, and you're chanting for the coach. What do you think that makes? How do you think that makes the players feel?
Exactly.
And that's
a great
just,
point, Coach.
That's just. That's disrespectful. It's not loyal. You're not a fan. If I'm a person sitting next to me, boom, I tell them, get your ass out of here. We don't need you in here. You don't want to watch this? Go someplace else. Go boo in a bar. You know, I just that really upsets me.
A lot of things to dig into there, Joshy. Yep. Because on a core level, I agree with what Barry's saying. I'm not somebody that if I'm upset, if I'm at, I mean, I was at a Bucks game a couple of years ago, right before they fired Adrian Griffin, where the effort was horrendous. Like, mm-hmm. they lost by, It might have been 50 points. I might be exaggerating that, but I don't think I have. They lost by 50 points at home to a Utah Jazz team. And people were booing. Understandably so. I was not one of them, but I understand if your frustration of your team drives you to the point where you are booing. Because it's not booing just because of one bad performance.
Right.
It's
the whole thing.
It's the entire era of Luke Fickell. Because Barry was also one who on that very show, on those airwaves last year, was incredibly upset that a bull streak that started with him as the head coach had come to a conclusion last year. So I understand some of it, but at the same time, like, so you can't be a real fan if you get frustrated with your team to the point of, so don't show up, so more, less, the stadium is supposed to be less full now?
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine there's anyone who is happy with the state of Wisconsin football.
Yeah. Barry Alvarez is the singular person who I think is afforded to have this opinion. I also think he couldn't be more off base and more missing the moment here. I think Barry Alvarez should be grateful that there's enough fans there to boo who care enough. Because if you talk to the majority of people right now and you bring up Wisconsin football, it's apathy. Most people don't care. You saw all the pictures of the stadium and how empty it was. The people who weren't booing simply didn't go or had left by that time. So the fact that there's people there passionate enough to care about their program and to care about what's happening on the field enough to boo, I think is a sign that you have some people you can win back. Because the degree at which I've gone out and watched a few Badgers games, it's not what people are watching. People don't care. It's on the TV and people will make some flippant comments. What makes it interesting is it's actually a win to me that people care enough to boo. Because the rest of them who didn't care enough to boo just went home. They went to a tailgate. They went out to the bar. They didn't care. I understand where Barry's coming from. He built this program to what it is now.
And I think there's some of that in there as well.
Yes.
For Barry, right? Like, I think there's a level of, I don't want to say he's embarrassed. I don't know the last time Barry was actually embarrassed,
right,
if that's an emotion when you get to the level of him that you can actually feel.
He's nicknamed the Don.
Yeah. I mean, but he's the one who built this program.
Correct.
Like, the last time you felt this way about Wisconsin football was before he arrived.
Yes.
Right? And he built this, the football program, and then later helped build the athletic program as the AD to the juggernaut that it had become. And if there's anybody who spoiled the fan base, I guess, Barry, it was you and the success that you had. Like, you, I guess you have a hand in this, but at the same time, don't you want those expectations of your football team? Isn't that something that you should want? And like you said, a fan base that cares enough. And Ryan from Iguanago saying here, it was pretty much just the students. Well, man, guess what? You gotta hook those students.
Yeah.
You gotta get them to show up.
Last I checked, they're pretty important.
Like, I do not blame students. As bad as this football team is right now, I don't blame students for not showing
up.
Hell no. For doing better things. I would call the fan base more spoiled when, in the probably the Brett Bielema heyday.
Right.
When I was in Madison, I was in Madison, and I was at just about every Badger game doing the Badger pregame and postgame stuff that we did in ESPN Madison from like 2009 to 2013. Mm-hmm. There was like a 4 or 5 year stretch where I was there. And I mean, for these noon games against Maryland where you're favored by 10.5, yeah, students were going to show up late.
Yes.
And they were going to leave after the jump around because they were up by a bunch and they're going to go out and do whatever they wanted to do on a Saturday. I'd call that spoiled.
Yes.
And taking advantage of...
Taking for granted.
Taking for granted, yes. Taking for granted how good your football program is. I don't think booing falls under the, hey, we're spoiled rotten. Yeah, have Badger football had it pretty good for a while? Sure. But this hire was meant to represent taking the next step and being consistently up there, compete, especially now in the 12-team era, of competing for those national championships. Instead, you've gone in the exact opposite direction, and I fully understand the frustration and the boos that came out.
I mean, Luke Fickell said it himself when he first got introduced here. It was a move to win championships, and the Badgers feel further away than they ever have been before. And I understand where Barry's coming from, because to a degree, I'm sure he takes the booing of Luke Fickell as a booing of him.
Sure.
Because he is... is the Wisconsin. Yes.
He's still the face of Wisconsin football. He is not associated with the university anymore, but he is still the face of Wisconsin football.
Right. And he's probably going to remain the face for a long time just because of what he elevated that program to. So I understand him saying spoiled rotten, and things were certainly probably worse prior to Barry getting here.
Correct.
And
fear the veer.
And I understand that where they are right now is certainly a level above that considerably. But this isn't what Luke Fickell was brought in to do. That was Maryland. You lost by 17.
As a 9.5-point favorite.
Right. You didn't show up. You weren't prepared. You looked like one of the bottom feeders of the Big Ten. The teams we used to laugh at when the Badgers would go score 50 on them. And they'd rush for 350 yards. The Badgers turned into the laughingstock.
I don't know if it's a funding problem within the football program. Look, Wisconsin's never going to have the money nor spend the money the way that Michigan, Ohio State, Oregon, some of these other teams in the Big Ten that you're going to expect to be perennial powers. But you're telling me the University of Wisconsin doesn't have the same amount of money or in the ballpark of money as Indiana
You can't
or
do
Illinois.
Correct.
Right? Like, and these are teams, those are two teams, and I know Indiana blew them out on Saturday night.
Right.
But those were two teams that played a pretty marquee matchup with some pretty small numbers next to their name when they played on Saturday night. You're telling me Wisconsin can't be that? I mean, Indiana made the college football playoff a year ago. Illinois had expectations to make it there this year. I think that kind of went down the drain when you lose by, was it 63? They lost by 63 to Indiana by.
Lost count.
Yeah, it was a high number. That's all I know. But still, like, those teams had those expectations. Nobody had expectations going into this game. Like, before this game, we had the question from, was it Ryan McGonigal?
Yes.
On the Carbos Talk and Text line, which is a higher number, Packers losses or Badger wins? Like, it was something even that was brewing before this game. And again, I understand where Barry's coming from. And also, Barry coming from a different era, saying, well, how do you think those student athletes feel when you boom? Yeah. Well, guess what?
They're paid.
This is a different era of college athletics.
Yes.
And when Barry was coaching, I understood that. And look, when I was closer to this, to the Badgers and doing the things I was just talking about, like, that was something I genuinely had to think about. Like, hey, these are student athletes.
Right.
Right? Yeah, they're getting a scholarship. Like, how much criticism can you levy on them? Like, it was a delicate balance. College football is just a lower level of professional football now.
It's AAA. Yeah. AAA NFL.
This is the way that college football went. I'm glad the players are getting paid because there's so much money in the sport. Like, they deserved to get paid. But with that money, you don't get to take that money consequence-free.
Well,
there are expectations that come with that money.
Let's also not ignore the fact that the booing and the chanting was at the head coach.
Correct.
It wasn't any of the players.
No.
It wasn't any. It's a state of the program. And sure, firing Fickell does implicate the players, because they are the ones on the field not performing. But the person being attacked and the person that's under the microscope right now, who had to get a vote of confidence from the AD, who then had to get a vote of confidence from the chancellor, that is all that the fans are mad about. And I understand Barry Alvarez, and I think he has the right to say what he did. I do think he missed the moment, and he's sort of off base here on where the program is. Because to me, imagine yourself being Barry Alvarez. Like, the idea of Luke Fickell failing isn't in his consideration, because he came in and through sheer force of will and charisma and getting his team to where it is, he turned a program around.
I mean, and you can take that to the next level too, Joshy. Barry thinking that Chris McIntosh could fail is not something, because Chris McIntosh,
he left him a perfect situation.
Chris McIntosh is the handpicked successor for Barry. Like,
they
had been grooming Chris for years to fill those shoes when Barry finally decided to retire. Like, so that's Barry's guy as well. Like, so the boos aren't just coming down on him, on the guy that
he's viewing
his guy
it as
hired.
An indictment of himself.
Correct.
Yes.
So, like, it's not that far of a degree of separation to trace it back to Barry. And I'm with you. Like, I understand why Barry's saying what he's saying. It makes sense to me why he specifically would say this. I just think he's wrong.
Yeah, and that's okay. And I think we have the right to tell Barry he's wrong on this one. He knows more about the football program, how college football works, all that stuff. But when it comes to being a fan, I think you and I and everyone that's listening in the audience has a better perspective on that and understands what booing is and what it means.
Colin says on the Carblues Talk at text line, 800-990-3776. Calling a fan base spoiled makes it worse. You set these expectations for the team. When they're not met, the fans get upset. Calling them spoiled is a bad look. Yeah. Again, these expectations.
Right.
Like you want this team to uphold the expectations that Barry had set 20 years ago when he stepped away from being the head coach.
I also think what saying the fan base is being spoiled is kind of takes the onus off of the program and the coaching staff and the AD. And maybe that's intentional, but no one's looking at the Badgers losing to Maryland and saying, well, if the fans would have showed up and been louder, they would have had a chance in that game. Like, there's one place to look at what happened with this program.
And I'll tell you what, Joshy, the votes of confidence that are flying around Madison, it's not helping the situation. Like, you could have easily... Like, here's the thing. You didn't have to give the vote of confidence.
Right.
If you're Chris McIntosh.
I believe he called that press conference himself.
That, as the athletic director, you don't have a contract that says you have to speak to the media. He did that himself.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been just as easy to say nothing.
Correct.
And I think saying nothing would have been the appropriate thing at this time.
It's one of those, you try and show support and strength and belief in the program, but in doing so, you show more cracks and make it seem even more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see people who are doing, for instance, do you think they're going out there and giving votes of confidence for Andy Reid? Hey, we really believe in this guy. Think of, like, did Bill Belichick ever need a vote of confidence when he was winning Super Bowls? Like, it showed a level of weakness that I don't think it was intended to. And then the chancellor being asked for comment and interview and declining said interview and then saying we have full belief. I'm starting to think there's things happening there that should cause us to think there could be changes.
Yeah, again, at that point, maybe the chancellor felt like they had to say something because McIntosh said something. I don't know. But
I mean, what's the next level? Do we need the governor to step in?
Who runs the Board of Regents? I think whoever that person is for the entire
UW
system.
Just follow this up the chain here.
The second we get government officials involved, man, then we've lost the plot. We do have other things we want to talk about when it comes to the Green Bay Packers, but it was... I guess I was surprised to hear Barry's reaction last night. Wanted to get to that, but we've got to get to the Packers because they were disappointing this weekend as well. Jason Wilde joins us next on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Ready, down, put.
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Brought to you by Exterior Pros. Ready to tackle your home improvement project this year? Exterior Pros in Baths is here to help you score big with quality home exterior and shower upgrades. Visit extpros.com. Also brought to you by Lakeland Supply. Lakeland Supply is in business to make your business better. Set up a free packaging and supply chain assessment at lakelandsupply.com.
He is our friend. He is our teammate. He is Jason Wilde. He joins us three times a week here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Gabe. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, dude?
I'm a little nervous.
Why?
What?
I have an electrical issue.
What?
And I have a guy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I'd be happy to pay in advance for the repair.
Well, you're caught up on all your outstanding debts. I think you should be okay. I mean, it only took you a year, but
yeah, and certainly I'm in no position to criticize. But it did take Mark/Keith Neitzel Electric about a month to cash my check, so I don't know if it wasn't delivered.
So in fairness, I did not see them for a little bit before I saw it in order for me to get them the check. So You delivered it to me, and I, like, right after that, Jason, I went on vacation. It took a little bit of time for me to see Mr. Knight.
Do I have this right, Jason? You are still in avowed balancing of the checkbook. You get out all the bills and the receipts, and you run it through. Yeah.
Yes. So I had more money in my account than I really thought I did.
I did not
overdraw.
Okay, I was about to say.
At Associated Bank takes great care of me. I'm all good. I am definitely in no position to criticize neither Mark Neitzel Electric nor his wonderful son who delivered my payment for me. I'm not criticizing anyone. I'm just lashing out because now I'm nervous. Because I've got another electrical issue, and it's like the old Ghostbusters song. Who are you going to call? The guy you didn't pay for a year.
Well, again, you've got his number. I think you guys should be able to figure that one out, Jason. And unless you need me to reach out. If you want me to put in a good word, just let me know.
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit apprehensive. But as is his son, he is a fantastically nice fellow. So I hope he will let bygones be bygones now that I have a zero balance. But again, I am a pay on time guy. Some forces they were in my control. I can't even blame them on forces beyond my control prevented a timely payment. So I will definitely reach out to him.
So Jason, Matt LaFleur, obviously frustrated. I think everybody frustrated after the Packers 13-10 loss to Cleveland. What was he most frustrated by when he spoke with the media yesterday? Because he took the shot seemingly at Rashid Walker, not happy with the undefeated talk, obviously not happy with the 17 penalties, 14 of which were accepted. What was he most frustrated with yesterday?
Yeah, I unfortunately for our buddy Shido, it was pretty clear that had been something that had been irritating him, and he must have said something to Walker between Wednesday and game time, because our teammate, quasi teammate Rob Domofsky, said that he went up to Sheed in the locker room after the loss, and not only did he tell Rob that he wasn't talking then, he informed him that he wouldn't be talking to us at all ever again. And look, I did, you know, and I thought I did it in a, I know there are some folks, especially people on Twitter, who called me a snake, which I haven't called a lot of stuff, but a snake is a new one. Who think, you know, that my questions are selfish and I like to hear my voice. Believe me, I don't like to hear my voice. I really do this for a reason. I think the technique more often than not works. And it was perfect for this one because, you know, I don't think Sheed, when he was talking last Wednesday, set out to proclaim, like, you know, Joe Namath poolside saying they were going to win the Super Bowl. I don't think he set out to say, hey, we're going to go undefeated. I don't think that was in his heart at all. I think he started talking, and Lord knows I know this feeling. You start talking, and then you can't find the off-ramp for what you're discussing. And maybe you say something you shouldn't in the process of circling the neighborhood.
I mean, I feel like he did a good job of being like, hey, but I also thought we were going to be undefeated the last 2 years. So,
right,
you know.
Right.
So you threw the qualifier out there.
And we went 20-14 over those two, so I was off by 14 games. So yeah, so he was definitely. I mean, he said he was pissed. Like he literally used that word, which I had to try and figure out if they could use that on the Channel 3 newscast when I sent along the clip from him talking or not, because I know we play a little looser with those rules than maybe TV does. But my point is that you're right. He had a lot that he was unhappy with, the penalties. Like the false starts, the question I have really is which offensive lineman is further into the doghouse? It's got to be Sheed, but if Jordan Morgan is not in there with him, he is, you know, kind of chained to the outdoor post outside of the doghouse, because I mean he had three false start penalties. He gave up at least one of the sacks. But one of his false starts.
He was the one who got pushed back on the blocked field goal.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. And he got one of those false starts on the third and one where they motioned Tucker Kraft mm-hmm. in to take the TE sneak. And
well, I'll defend him there, Jason, because the Eagles do that all the time and it never gets called. So he probably thought he could get away with it.
Yeah, sure. Who does he think he is? An Eagle? I mean, look, there's a lot to be frustrated with. In fact, you know, and look, it's our job to ask, and I know there are those that don't think we ask enough of them, but it's our job to ask tough questions when they're required. And it's also our job to ask them in a manner. Like, why does Rich Bisaccia still have a job? I demand an answer. Is not going to get me anywhere, mm-hmm. right? And so, and now asking, look, you guys, there's been institutional failures on special teams for years. This was supposed to be different. Why does it feel like, you know, you get certain things figured out, you feel good about your snap, hold, kick battery, but then you have other issues? Like, I just, you know, does it just feel like you guys aren't kind of holding up your end of the donkey on special teams? That's a paraphrasing of what I said. And, you know, his answer wasn't, and I don't know what people think he's going to do, but his answer wasn't going to be, yeah, I paid a lot of money for Rich Bisaccia, and he kind of sucks. Like, I know that's what people want to hear, but that's not what you get from that. So I thought we asked him a lot of very significant negative questions. But at one point, you know, I did feel compelled to say, okay, Matt, I understand you're frustrated, but what do you take from this moving forward? What are the lessons here that you take from this? Because you still got a really good football team, which I think he believes, I think everyone in that building believes. They're a really good football team that played a really crappy game against a team they should have beaten. And so unlike the panic that's being felt in Madison and throughout the state about the college football team, I think this was a frustrating, irritating, crappy day blip on an otherwise good season.
Matt LaFleur over the past 2 days has taken blame for both the interception that took place from Jordan Love and the third down sack mishap. How much do you think Matt LaFleur actually believes he's the one to blame in that? And how much should he be held to account for those mistakes?
Yeah, I'm still surprised during COVID that he, you know, when he said we're all in this sucker together, he didn't say, this is my fault, I've brought this on our country. Like, he takes the responsibility for everything. And, yep. And Josh, to answer your question, I do think he believes what he says. Like, I think he does. I think he is wired that way. And it's not purely for show, mm-hmm. but it is. I think it's exaggerated for show, if that's possible. Like, to take the pressure off of his guys, he will take it a little more than he necessarily should, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, his point about the interception, and look, what was interesting to me is the critique that he got from a lot of us was, you know, the old Vikings Brett Favre call in Minneapolis. Why do you even contemplate passing? Why don't you just run the ball? This ain't Detroit, man. This is the third game of the season. Like, he Paul Allen, that's my worst Paul Allen.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Allen was trolling Packers fans online after, but whatever.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me either. But my point is that I think he that was not his issue. His issue was that he just had a bad play call, but I don't think he was willing to go so far as to say we should have run it there. You know, he gave me that hindsight is 2020 answer. What I thought was a stretch, but I think he does believe this, is the mistake he made at the end of the third quarter was he had them rush to the line, and then he gave Love the option to snap it if he saw man coverage, which he did. And I think what he was saying there was, I should have just said, look, let's just run out the quarter, and then we'll take a fresh play to start the fourth. And I think that's a valid thing to take the blame for. Now, what he didn't have to take the blame for was Love backpedaling whatever it was, 11 yards that he lost or whatever, and then not throwing the ball away when he was plenty far out of the pocket and he just had to get it back to the line of scrimmage. So I think he takes more blame for things than he should in protection of his players. But if you notice, I did follow up on the third and three interception call, and I said, all right, I understand you take the blame, but, I mean, What can Jordan do differently there? And he did reply with that quote about how what we always tell our quarterbacks is don't make a play call worse. And he clearly did in that instance.
Jason, how does this offensive line get better?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm sure they're asking that same question in Madison, too. You know, look, first of all, they get their guys healthy, right? Like, Zach Tom.
Is he going to go on IR?
I like to think, and then I would hope you guys and all of our shows feel like when I appear on the program, I know what the hell I'm talking about. In that instance, like, part of me wants to argue I did know what I was talking about because there was no reason for him to have played. It was stupid.
Well, Rob told us yesterday that he looked like he was having a hard time running out of the tunnel before the game.
Yeah, that's not great, Bob. and so that's a tip of the cap to what Aaron Rodgers used to call Rob. I just don't get it. Like, I talked to Zach Tom on Friday, and, you know, he was like he had like two little tiny Zach Toms on each shoulder pad. I told you guys this, and he sounded like a guy that was like, I really should play, but I really shouldn't play. Like, my team needs me. They're going up against a really good group, and I'm a really good player, but I don't know if I'm up to it. And then when he was announced as being active when we were doing Green Bay game day pregame, I was floored. And then I was not surprised with how it played out. Now, would I have thought he would have made it longer than one snap? Like, I guess we all have to apologize now to Jair Alexander. He at least made it 10 snaps in Chicago. But what a debacle that was. And I understand that you want your players to have ownership and be able to say, okay, I'm good. I'm going to go. I'm going to give this a go. But that was just a colossal mistake. And then it just cascaded from there. And I'm sure you guys heard me also ask, you know, about Jordan Morgan, about stretching him too thin. And LaFleur acknowledged that that's probably what they're doing. Like, here's a guy that has told us repeatedly, every time he's been asked since he was drafted, him saying, I want to be a left tackle. And good luck. He'll get to be that next year, I think. But in the meantime, they played him now in three games. They played him at left guard. They played him at right tackle, and they played him at right guard. Remember, he was rotating before everybody got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you know, he's talk about a jack of all trades, master of none. Like, he hadn't played it at any of those very well. And so I don't know what they're going to do moving forward. I would say that it was interesting that they went to him after the one snap instead of Anthony Belton, because all we heard was how great Anthony Belton had been. So they've got some problems there, even after they acquired, you know, Dolly Parton's cousin, who I don't understand. You gave up a sixth round pick in 2027 for him. And like, every time he's an option, they never go to him.
I think he played, like, what did he play, 10 or 15 snaps?
When Tom
initially went down against Detroit?
Correct. Yep. And I think that philosophy was, he's more experienced than a rookie. Put him in, he can handle it when he has to be put into a game. But then with a week's preparation, we want to go with Anthony Belton, except, as we talked about, that wasn't a week's preparation. That was a bunch of walkthroughs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the deal is there, but the only time he came onto the field on Sunday was when Sheed went out and they had to bring in a third backup to have a full offensive line.
All right, so good things. Good things happening in Green Bay. Really excited for the Packers, Cowboys. Can't wait. Really can't wait, Jason. We appreciate the time, man.
I'm glad it's the same way I feel about my electricity. So I'm glad I could help. All right, guys, take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde joins us three times a week here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. We'll talk to him again on Thursday.
And Jason Wilde is brought to us by Lakeland Supply. Lakeland Supply is in business to make your business better. Set up a free packaging and supply chain assessment at lakelandsupply.com.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I'm going to go with the corn dog, the old corn dog, the corn dog for the
pierogies birthday. And borscht all day long.
That's just crazy. Nobody likes borscht, let alone
God,
on their
it's
birthday.
So good. It's the only thing that makes my mouth water, other than my wife.
On 94.5 ESPN.
I don't feel feel great about the Packers' offensive line after talking with Jason Wilde, Joshy. Joshy, our cousin sub of the day. Brian D., cousin sub of the day. Hanging out here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. It doesn't seem like... Yes, if the Packers' offensive line is healthy, I feel good about it. But we knew that going in. But yeah. Even the guys that were healthy played terrible on Sunday. Like, awful on Sunday. The top five worst Pro Football Focus grades for the Green Bay Packers, the five offensive linemen who played the most.
Also, those were the five worst grades in all three games. So if you take all the bad grades from the previous three games, the five worst were the five from the offensive line. And mind you, they did play about seven different offensive linemen. So two of them were able to keep themselves out of there. But Rasheed Walker, Jordan Morgan, Aaron Banks, Elton Jenkins, and I believe
Belton
all made the list. And maybe this is a degree of offensive line arrogance and just the success of the Packers. Certainly there's a degree of, if you don't have healthy guys, your offensive line simply can't be 8-9 deep. Doesn't exist.
Correct. Yep.
Most teams would love to have five guys that they feel good about starting at any given time.
I think the best teams have six.
Yes. And the Green Bay Packers are probably 6-7 deep. The problem is, you lose one, you lose two, you lose three, you're in big trouble.
But the problem, Joshy, is Jordan Morgan's supposed to be that sixth guy.
Yes. I think
I am at a loss of words of how bad he was on Sunday. Like, that's as worse of a game as you could possibly have.
Yeah,
I agree with Jason. Some of it is they're moving around too much. Yes. It's hard for an offensive lineman to get comfortable. I mean, what is it? The old saying that they stole from, was it Josh Sitton, who had the it's like wiping your behind with your left hand.
Yes. Yeah. I think there's a degree of. I mean, he's a second-year player. He missed large portions of last year. He's played right guard. He's played left guard. We hadn't seen him at right tackle at any point.
Yeah, that was a little surprising.
And then he was the first one out there against one of the best defensive lines in all of the NFL. Like, they are certainly doing him no favors by doing that. And I think Anthony Belton, for a rookie, has done a suitable job at right tackle.
I would have preferred to see Belton out there right away.
I do, too.
And I think they learned that lesson.
And I think they are trying the old throw anything at the wall and hope it sticks method, when they probably should just be going, these are our guys, we're going to keep them together, we're going to let them, because there is cohesion and there is gelling for an offensive line. Mm-hmm. Like, taking one guy out and putting another one in doesn't mean that's going to work in that combination. I think it's multiple factors that we saw. It was the shuffling of so many players around, because they had four different offensive line arrangements. At least three.
Well, especially because Sheed went out for a couple of plays and they had to bring in Kennard. So
yeah, so that's not going to work. It's not going to work, especially when you have Myles Garrett bearing down on the other side, and Mason Graham, who had nearly a 50% pass rush win rate against the interior of the Packers defensive line.
Well, so that's the problem, Josh. Like, the guy, like, we were told, and I know he played well in the first two games, but we were told that Elton Jenkins can be an all-pro center.
Yep.
And
I watched him flat out whiff. I don't know if I've ever seen that from Elton Jenkins. Yeah, I think they'll be able to figure out something, barring further injury to any of the players that are now being thrust into starting. I do think they will find a happy medium. I don't think they're going to be as good as we hoped. I think that ship has kind of sailed for us.
I don't know if that's true. Once they get healthy with their five, the five that they trust the most, the starting five, so getting Banks and Tom back, at some point I think that offensive line can be a top 10, top five offensive line in the league.
I think it's possible. I'm suspicious about Aaron Banks. To a degree, and some of it is health. And he hasn't completed a single game in the three he's played, and it's all been three different injuries that have caused him to miss time.
Back, ankle, groin.
Yes, that seems to be a problem. That's a Christian Watson trajectory there. And it's been only in three games. I think they'll be able to work with it. I also think a big portion that affected them is Tucker Kraft is clearly injured to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
He whiffed on a couple blocks that you would never see him do. And I think they found themselves in a spot where, well, we were planning to rely on Tucker Kraft. We can't really rely on him. And now we've got guys playing all over the damn place.
While I am frustrated with the offensive line, there was, you know, it didn't go well. there was a moment of levity that I was able to find that was making its rounds on the internet. We'll tell you about that. Because, again, it was a bad day for Sheed, but, you know, it produced a moment of comedy in the game as well. We'll dive into that sound coming up next. But if you're looking for a new car, truck, or SUV, take the nearest exit to Ewald Automotive for 2025 model year clearance pricing. Save over $14,000 or get 0% financing, all makes, all models over 720. 25's in stock with model year clearance pricing with the Ewald low price guarantee, which means they'll beat your best price on a new vehicle by $500 or they'll give you $500 cash. It's only at the Ewald model year clearance sales event. When they're gone, they're gone. You should trust Ewald like I have ever since I've moved to Milwaukee. They have always taken care of me. It's why I only trust Ewald with all my automotive needs, whether I'm looking for a new car, leasing a new car, if I need service on my car. Ewald's the place to go because they make it so easy. And it starts at EwaldAuto.com.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
363.
What's that?
Oh, the number of yards they gave up on the ground against the Philadelphia Eagles.
It's a Bible verse, John 3:63. Look it up. Tell us what it
says. I thought it was Joe 3:63, and it was, thou shalt not get past me on the line of scrimmage.
On 94.5 ESPN.
If you can't laugh at your team from time to time, some funny things that happen, like, you just need to lighten up a little bit. And I think this will bring a little bit of levity. People are still frustrated, certainly frustrated with Wisconsin Badgers where we started the show, certainly frustrated with the Green Bay Packers and the way things went down in Cleveland on Sunday. But NFL films, you know, they got mics everywhere all over these fields. They captured, I mean, I think it's fair to call this a funny moment.
Oh, yeah.
A funny moment in the game. This might be my new favorite one. There's an old one of a guy who got juked out, and like the sound he makes when he gets juked out is one of my favorites. This is right up there with that. Here's what happened when Rashid Walker was going one-on-one with Myles Garrett during a play on Sunday.
Bro. That is a penalty. I beat him on the cleanest inside last series.
Jordan! Jordan, run!
Yes.
So if you happen to miss it in the early play, because again, you hear the pads thumping and the sounds that you typically hear during a game. But while those pads were crushing together, Rashid Walker got beat so bad on an inside move by Myles Garrett that he just yelled, Jordan, run.
Jordan! Jordan, run!
So, if you watch the clip, and you can find it all over Twitter at this point, Rashid Walker clean whiffs.
didn't get close.
And he cleaned whiff on probably the utmost physical specimen in all of the NFL when you combine size, speed,
strength.
Yes. So, I think that's a good friend move by Rashid Walker.
Jordan!
Because Myles Garrett, untouched, full sprint from a wide nine position.
Just nothing to slow him down. Nothing, nothing between him and your quarterback. Because you whiffed so bad.
Yes, it was like he was fresh out of the blocks on a 100-yard sprint. So when you screw up that bad, you got to do something. Holding wasn't an option because he was already two steps past him. So Jordan, run!
Jordan! Jordan, run!
You got to exhaust all options as a left tackle.
Hey, we've made the jokes about lookout blocks before. Yes. Like, this is... That actually happened to Rashid Walker.
Uh-huh.
This is what actually happened.
You got to do all you can. And at that point, the last tool he had in his belt was...
Hey, it worked. Jordan got rid of the football.
He did run.
He did run. Ran enough to get rid of the football. Did not take the sack, nor the hit. Didn't really take a big hit there from Myles Garrett either.
Yeah.
So I would say the strategy there after he's messed up so bad of Jordan run actually worked out in the end for Rashid Walker.
Jordan run!
I can't imagine the empty feeling of knowing you're on an island with the best pass rusher in all the NFL. And you get nothing. You don't even scrape his shoulder pads. Because in that situation, if you get that beat that bad, you would just grab his arm.
Yeah.
Take the holding call. We can't let We can't let this guy get to our quarterback.
I saw that last night in the Monday Night Football game during a punt. Guy literally just tackled a guy who was just had a free reign at Detroit's punter, and they're like, nope.
Yes.
The holding is so much better than having this thing blocked.
Yes.
I am taking you down.
Yeah, because Jordan Love would have been in a spot to get injured, and I'm not being flippant with that. If he did, he didn't see that, and Jordan Love was staying
in the
pocket.
Because it's coming from his blind side. Yes. Like, so just, if you think of the play where Micah Parsons beat Penei Sewell on a very similar inside move against the Lions that led to the Evan Williams interception. The difference there is it basically happened in front of Jared Goff.
He was looking at him in the face.
Goff saw Micah Parsons coming, panicked, and threw it before Micah could get there. Coming from the blind side, you don't always know that, which is why you need, as you said, your friend to yell out, hey, maybe you should run from the big scary man.
Run!
It's just a fun moment from the game. If you can't laugh at that, it's just absolutely, it's funny. So again, not great for the Packers. We'll see if the offensive line can get better, but we've got something coming up. 800-990-3776. We've got a fun giveaway, for Got Your Legends. It's the new book that is out today from Mike Greenberg and our friend, mega producer, Paul Hembo Hembakitis. So in this book, they rank the Mount Rushmore for every team out there. So what you can win a signed autographed copy of this book. All you have to do is call us, 800-990-3776, and correctly identify the four Mount Rushmore members of the Milwaukee Brewers. The one thing I will say is it doesn't have to just be players. So keep that in mind as you make your guesses. So if you call us, 800-990-3776, and in 2 minutes we'll take your calls, the first person to correctly guess the four Mount Rushmore people for the Milwaukee Brewers in the book Got Your Legends will win an autographed copy of Got Your Legends from Mike Greenberg and Paul Hembo Hembakitis. That comes up next your way in 2 minutes here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.